ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Thursday, the 29th of January. I'm Isabella Higgins, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. Fire crews continue to battle out-of-control bushfires in regional Victoria, with many still evacuated from their homes. Blazes have claimed hundreds of thousands of hectares of land and brought down 16 properties after days of record-breaking heat. Authorities have warned lives and buildings are still under threat, despite more favourable conditions in some parts of the state today. Reporter Kathleen O'Connor is at an emergency hub in Colac in Victoria's southwest. Kathleen, what's the latest on this fire?
The bushfire in the Otways is still not yet under control. We're just here in Colac, which is about a 20-minute drive from Gellibrand. That was one of the towns that was impacted by the fire. Authorities at the State Control Centre have confirmed with us that 11,500 hectares have now burnt in that fire. But the good news is that there was no major growth overnight. Authorities are still continuing to backburn to strengthen those containment lines just to try and bring that fire under control, because it's still not yet under control. We've got around 360 firefighters still on the scene. They're just working on containing that fire so that all the people who have been displaced can come in and assess the damage to their homes. And the last we heard was that there was more than 10 structures that may have been impacted, but we're still unclear on those statistics.
Kathleen, as you say, a major firefighting effort underway. You're at one of two relief centres set up in the area. What's happening right there where you are?
Yeah, that's right. So we're at the showgrounds here in Colac. This is the main relief centre set up for those hundreds of residents in the towns around that national park who were told by emergency services to evacuate a few days ago. Some have been here for a couple of days. I can see a lot of caravans, a lot of cars, four-wheel drives. We've got a lot of volunteers here on the ground as well. I just spoke to a couple of volunteers from the Lions Club and the Salvation Army, and they're just cooking a barbecue for some of those residents and some of the emergency services who have been working really hard to contain the fire. I have been driving around this morning. There's lots of road signs just to be aware of smoke in the area. I also hit a few road closures as well in that area.
And what kind of conditions are the authorities expecting today?
Yeah, so there is still a high fire danger. The maximum temperature today, according to the Bureau of Meteorology, is 27 degrees and partly cloudy. But they do say that there is the chance of smoke haze in the morning and in the afternoon, and some light winds. So that's some really welcome news for some of those firefighters who are trying to get on top of that fire. So hopefully we'll have some good news a little bit later on today.
Reporter Kathleen O'Connor there. And Oliver Gordon has been speaking to locals in Victoria's southwest who've been fighting to save homes and livelihoods.
Emergency crews responded quickly when the Carlisle River fires in Victoria reached Glen Knight's Otways Berry Farm.
Well, they called it in and about 8 fire trucks were arrived and they were driving around my paddock.
Aerial reinforcements have helped protect the property too.
And the helicopter dropped on a couple of spots. I had fires start in my blueberry patch and in the strawberry, so I was running around with a hose trying to put those out. And then I was up to 2 o'clock going around putting out, blacking out what was left.
Glen Knight hasn't lost his home or farm, but there have been casualties.
Well, actually, I'm going to bury a dead goat first because it's starting to smell pretty bad. But, yeah, we're really quite lucky. It could have been far, far worse.
Diana Stubbs lives 4 kilometres out of Gellibrand, which has borne the brunt of the fires. She's been evacuated to nearby Colac. It's a nervous wait, the fire sitting ominously close to her home.
About a kilometre away in the eucalypt plantation, and it's burning quite vigorously in there at the minute.
Friends closer to the fire front have confirmed that, as of yesterday evening, her home was still standing.
What unfolds over the next day, so it's really in the lap of the gods and the fire support and SES and what have you.
Corolla Ansis runs the Carlisle River Wildlife Shelter and has grave fears for the kangaroos and wallabies she's helped rehabilitate over the years.
The kangaroo food that I left out hasn't been touched, so I suspect that my kangaroos and wallabies are either so far gone that they haven't returned home, or more than likely they've been burnt and they're dead.
And how does it make you feel to say that?
It's kind of hard to explain how you feel when you come home and you see all of that and you know that you've lost so many animals. Yeah. I haven't been sleeping very well thinking about it. I've been a little bit busy during the days with trying to get donations and get them out to my carers and everything like that. And people have been ringing me and offering support. So I don't have too much time to ponder about it. But in the quiet times at night, yeah, it kind of sort of hits home then.
Wildlife sanctuary owner Carola Answers ending Oliver Gordon's report. Nationals MP Colin Boyce says he's canvassing support after sensationally announcing he will challenge for the National Party leadership. The move has ignited speculation he'll end up defecting to One Nation, but he says this is about trying to reunite the coalition. For now, Liberal leader Susan Lee and Nationals leader David Littleproud remain at odds after a rejected invitation to hash things out. Here's political reporter Sarah Tomevska.
Oh, hello. In the halls of Parliament House, One Nation leader Pauline Hanson has left open the door for more recruits.
But I tell you what, I'm not interested in bringing people across to One Nation just because they're opportunistic about it.
Despite the defection of former Nationals leader Barnaby Joyce to One Nation last month, Nationals MP Colin Boyce says he won't be following in his friend's footsteps.
No. I have said it many times and I'm getting sick of repeating myself. I am not joining One Nation.
Not now, ever?
Not ever.
The Queensland MP says he wants the coalition to get back together, warning not to do so would be political suicide. David Littleproud has ruled out reunion while Susan Lee remains Liberal leader. Ms Lee has told colleagues the Nationals leader rejected her invitation to meet up before Parliament returns next week so he could focus on the upcoming spill. David Littleproud says that's inaccurate and that a meeting will be scheduled once the Nationals leadership is resolved. Mr. Boyce is hitting the phones to canvass support. Has anyone said that they would vote for you in a leadership challenge?
Look, I'm not going to go into those discussions.
Multiple Nationals have told the ABC support for David Littleproud is rock solid, including Michael McCormack, who remains coy about his own ambitions to return to the top job.
I'm never going to say that I'll never ever run again as the leader, but look, I support the leader, I supported David, and I want David to succeed, I want the Nationals to succeed. That said, I like Colin.
Nationals MP Darren Chester in a statement says he would not support the spill motion, expressing frustration at internal leadership debates and calling for a coalition reunion. None of Colin Boyce's colleagues have publicly backed him. Do you feel respected by your colleagues?
I believe so.
Some of them have been confused, bemused, shocked by this announcement. What is your message to your colleagues?
Take a breath of fresh air, take a few steps sideways. Please understand where the National Party is headed if it wants to go to the federal election alone. Many in that room right now may possibly not hold their seats.
Nationals leader David Littleproud declined an interview, but in a statement yesterday said he stands by his record as leader.
Political reporter Sarah Tomevska there. Tensions over the Trump administration's immigration raids and the shooting deaths of two Americans are running dangerously high. A local politician in Minnesota was attacked during a town hall meeting where she was calling for the abolition of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. There's also been clashes on the streets and attempts to enter diplomatic buildings. Stephanie Smale reports.
Ilhan Omar is calling for the US Homeland Security Secretary's resignation as she's attacked in Minneapolis. A man lunges from the crowd, spraying a syringe of liquid at her before being tackled by security and taken away. There are no signs she's injured, but the Congresswoman ignores pleas to see a doctor, continuing with her speech calling for ICE to be scrapped.
US citizens are being assaulted and detained. Minnesotans are expected to carry their citizenship papers. People are dying in ICE custody.
Democrat Senator Dick Durbin has slammed the attack on the Congresswoman.
What happened to her is an outrage.
And he's blaming the US president for the ongoing crisis in Minnesota.
I think what he has created is an environment of hate and threats and violence. It's going to take a long time to live down.
The US President Donald Trump was not sympathetic. A longtime critic of Ilhan Omar, he suggested she might have staged the attack. Meanwhile, the Congresswoman continued her criticism of ICE's presence in Minnesota, saying if US Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem doesn't resign, articles of impeachment will be introduced. With two people killed and others injured protesting against ICE agents, some Republicans have joined calls for Kristi Noem to go too. Senator Tom Tillis describing Ms. Noem as incompetent and an amateur in the strictest sense of the word.
She's a complete failure on a disaster response. There's no comparison between his Homeland Security and President Trump's first term and this one. They're asleep at the switch. And causing people not to get badly needed resources down there. She clearly doesn't know how to manage. She's never managed a large organization, and she's failing at every possible measure of the job.
Others, including Republican Senator Eric Schmidt, are still backing the ICE approach.
So I think it's very important that deportations continue, and they can be done in a very orderly way. That's typically how that happens. But when you have politicians telling people that these guys are the Gestapo, that the secret police, Republicans are Nazis, I just don't think that's appropriate.
The US President Donald Trump has signalled an intention to scale back the contentious operation, but clashes continue between ICE agents and protesters on the streets. And video has been released of an immigration agent trying to enter the Ecuadorian consulate in Minneapolis. Ecuador's foreign ministry says the incident happened weeks ago, but it sent a note of protest to US officials, demanding such incidents not be repeated.
Stephanie Smale reporting there. Meanwhile, the US President Donald Trump has intensified his comments about Iran, threatening major destruction. In a social media post overnight, he claimed an armada was headed for Iran and warned time was running out for the regime to cut a deal with the US. Our America's editor John Lyons is in Washington. John, what's the president getting at with this post?
Isabella, I think President Trump is trying to keep it in the public's mind here when he talks about a massive armada is heading to Iran, and then he goes on and says, like Venezuela, it's ready, willing and able to rapidly fulfil its mission. And then in capital letters, as he often does on his social posts, he says no nuclear weapons. So I think it is trying to keep in the mind of the American public that what will be his justification should he order, as Commander-in-Chief, a new military attack on Iran.
John, this situation weeks ago seemed like it was quite hot, but it almost looked like tensions were dying down. Does this ratchet them back up?
Well, this is classic Donald Trump military playbook. We saw it last year when he bombed Iran's nuclear facilities, and in the few weeks leading up to it, he played it down, and there was only occasional mention of it, like here. Many people think the Iran issue for the United States has gone away. It's not. They are sending a huge military force to be near Iran to be ready. My own assessment, talking to people here in Washington, is that the United States will engage in military action against Iran in the short-term future, and that part of that, the indication of that can be, if you're reading the Israeli media, they're certainly preparing Israeli airspace, is preparing to shut down aircraft if need be. So he's done this with the Iran bombing on the nuclear facilities. He did it last year with Venezuela as well, of letting things settle down a bit and then striking when they least expect it. So I think this will be consistent with that if he does strike.
And John, probably worth reminding the audience, this all came after weeks of protests in Iran, anti-regime protests. And from the very beginning, President Trump had been weighing in on this. He had been encouraging protesters to go out. We know it was a very deadly crackdown from the regime. Why do you think he's been keeping such a close eye on this issue?
I think that the United States would like to see the end of the leadership of Supreme Leader in Iran. In fact, the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, was talking about possible regime change only a few hours ago. He said, in fact, he thinks it will be more difficult, any operation against Iran, than it would be against Venezuela. They haven't said that they want regime change, but all of their indications are that they would like that.
And all of this latest commentary comes as President Trump faces pressure at home about immigration raids in Minneapolis.
Well, we've seen out of that, the latest development is that very ugly attack on Ilhan Omar. She's a Minnesota Democrat. We saw the pictures of a man rushing towards her when she spoke and spraying an unidentified liquid at her. It was obviously an intimidating and an ugly attack. What's really interesting here is President Trump's response, because he's been targeting her for months. He referred to her in December as garbage. And he said her friends are garbage. She's the only Somali American in the Congress. And he often says Somali, it's not even a country. Usually when there is a political attack of this sort, whoever the president or prime minister is normally tries to calm down tensions. That's what I've always seen. This is different with Donald Trump. He, in fact, his response to that attack was, I think she's a fraud. I really don't think about that. She probably had herself sprayed, knowing her. It's extraordinary to see the President of the United States not condemning political violence.
Our America's editor, John Lyons in Washington, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
For more than 2 years, the words "bring them home" have echoed across Israel. That call has finally been answered, with the last of the 251 hostages taken by Hamas during its October 7 attack now laid to rest. But new pressure is mounting on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Correspondent Bridget Rollison reports from the town of Meitar in southern Israel.
The first to go in and the last hostage to come home. That's how Ran Gavili's father, Itzik, described the police officer as he was finally laid to rest after an agonising 843 days.
I'm so proud to be your father, and I miss you every second. Every second and every minute. I love you.
Hundreds of people lined the streets waving Israeli flags as the 24-year-old's body was driven from a military base in Tel Aviv to his hometown of Meitar. Ran Gavili was killed by Hamas in the line of duty on October 7, 2023. His body was taken over the border into Gaza. Israeli police spokesman Dean Elsdan told the ABC he's a hero.
It's a sense of closure. It's an emotional day for all of us. He's really a role model to all of us. I know he's going to be a role model to the generations of police officers to come, the bravery he showed.
The funeral brings an end to a painful part of Israel's history. It's the first time since 2014 no Israeli hostages have been held in Gaza. Many, including Meitar local Or, hope this will allow the country to start to move forward.
I was very happy that they found him. Now we can start healing, you know, as a community. I know now that the process is complete.
The return of Ran removes one of the hurdles to the fragile ceasefire in Gaza moving to its next phase. Israel had said it was refusing to advance the deal without all of its hostages returned. Now that process is complete, pressure is mounting on Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
We acted and we found Rani. And so we achieved what we were yearning for 843 days, to bring all of our brothers and sisters back home. And it's not the end yet. We also stick to our other goals, to disarm Hamas of its weapons, to demilitarize the Gaza Strip, and we will achieve this too. Those who seek to kill us should know whoever raises their hand on Israel will pay an unbearable price.
Another key part of the second phase is the reopening of the Rafah border crossing between Gaza and Egypt in both directions to allow injured Palestinians to leave the Strip and get vital medical treatment. This is Bridget Rollison in Meitar reporting for AM.
And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Isabella Higgins.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. One Nation's support is surging. That's according to successive opinion polls this year, which have Pauline Hanson's party with a primary vote higher than it's ever been before. Today, Tony Barry, director at the Redbridge Group, on the voters flocking to the populist political offering. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.